Thank you, Gordy. So for those of you who've been here before, and for the new people, what we do at one point in this meeting, which we're going to do now, is have a town hall discussion. Sometimes the speakers are invited to sit up here. I notice we don't have enough, but they're in the audience and can participate as well. In addition to Ayana, who is still here someplace, and Randall, James Wells is here, and Kevin is someplace. Kevin's back there. But we have, you know, Gordy Kane, the other physicists, and all the high school teachers. And what we do is have a discussion, one, about what we, and we don't need the this thing anymore. And there is an off switch somewhere. So any, you know, speakers, come on up and sit here. And what we would like would be some feedback about what we do here during this this conference, how we can improve it, what else we might be doing, and so on. All of that is good information and help for us. But more generally, this brief forum we have is one place where we can all discuss together issues that we face when trying to do outreach or bring the science we think is so exciting to the public and to your students. And we all have ways of doing that, and we could perhaps benefit from new suggestions, new ideas. But also sometimes this is an opportunity for you all to raise questions that might be of general interest to a rather select group of high school teachers from around the country. So why don't we divide it up a bit into topics. First, it would be good to get, for us, to get some reaction. We like to get feedback on how we're performing and what we should be doing, and any suggestions or complaints, you know, useful suggestions or not. We have included, I think you should all have on your chair by now, in addition to those rules, a questionnaire which briefly asks you some questions relating to the conference that we hold. And if you're able, please fill these out. They're very valuable. It's the only way we get feedback. Not now, necessarily. But anyway, so there should be, we have other microphones that we could pass out. Let's see, who can help? Jocelyn, can you help pass out the microphone? So please speak up when. But so, and then we can go on to discuss more any broader issues you'd like to bring up about. So, any ideas? Are we doing the right thing? Should we change it? Is it perfect? I'm not asking the people who've been here 8-7 times. Like,
will this conference be on videotape or online?
Everything will be online. Perhaps it is already. Ayana's talk is already. No, everything that we do here is online. And I hope you all are acquainted with our website. One of the things, and again, ideas would be useful for us, that we're thinking of doing over the next year or two is to try to improve our website, which has over 20,000 talks now. Of various levels of lectures, so that people like your students could make more use of it. There's a lot of great stuff there that high school students, I think, would benefit from if they knew it was there and maybe had a little bit of preparatory material. That takes a lot of work and effort, but we're thinking about doing that in some form or another. Yes, right here.
The conference is perfect. But if it had any improvement, maybe 2 days, I know my biggest frustration, I guess, sometimes is that there's just so much information coming so fast that it's hard to absorb it, and I sometimes feel the same frustration from some of the speakers. Maybe problems that can't be overcome, but suggestion.
Yeah, we've had that comment before. There are budgetary and organizational reasons we haven't gone that way. You have to realize that all of our marvelous speakers here are volunteers whom we've co-opted into doing this, partly because
yes.
partly because they're attending the conference, which actually in this case, this conference precedes the conference, which begins next week. And usually it's at the end of a week-long conference, and the speakers are kind of tired out. But yeah, we could expand. This is a very intensive day, right? With a lot of information. I'm not sure how many people really would could take 2 days of this.
With the weather you have here, 2 days or 3 days, I would take it.
Right, but you might be on the beach for the second day. You had a question. You had a question?
I still have.
I
think conference is perfect, and I think this is my second time. The first time last year, you asked about how to reach out more people and so on. The suggestion was made about through AAPT local and so on and so forth. That has proven to be effective, I believe. The other is I was wondering about the speakers. You said volunteers. And to reach out farther, we are landlocked. I'm from the Midwest. And if the speakers themselves would come, I would host the speaker, any one of the speakers, and to reach out high schools, my college, community colleges, and the local community and the people. Because this aspect has already appeared in the National Geographic magazine, the last issue. And many people are interested, the lay people.
Well, there are, I mean, most physics departments and certainly national labs do have, you know, outreach programs. And I'm not sure where you are from. Well, you're in a perfect position. I mean, if you contact people at Fermilab, I'm sure they will find someone.
Yeah.
That it might be helpful to people who are not in the happy position of only being, 160 miles or something from Fermilab. It's not that close, but 120, okay. I was thinking of Iowa City where my wife grew up. That's a little bit further down the road, I guess. Anyway, so one thing that you can do is, as David suggested, call up a local physics department. And if I were doing that as a cold call, and I were interested in having somebody come and talk about their research. And believe me, there are lots of people, I think, who are eager to do that. The person I would start with is somebody relatively senior in the administrative staff of the department, because they will know who can actually give a talk to a group of high school students. And remember, if you're going to do that, it's probably good for you to meet with the person before lunch and talk about, you know, over lunch or something, and talk about some of the things that that you might want them to cover, some of the things that your students might be interested in, and tell them about what your students have studied already. And I think that could really improve the quality of such an experience. But I love going into classrooms, and there are a lot of people who do. So I think none of us up here are unique in that respect.
By the way, here at the KATB, we have an ongoing program, actually not of sending professors or people like me out to the high school to give talks, but postdocs. That actually works in some way better because the postdocs are younger. They look more like your students. They can really be role models. They're very excited about their work. Our problem, and our postdocs are very eager to do that, our problem, to tell you the truth and to turn it back on you, is that we found it difficult to get schools to invite our postdocs out in around here. You know, you guys seem to be pretty overloaded, and your schedules are full, and you're right? And so it's there's a problem on both sides of this, I think. A lot of questions, a lot of issues.
Okay. Thank you. Well, my question also is about reaching out to high school students, middle school students, even elementary school students, especially in the poor areas. If there is a way of bringing the joy of science to schools that are in poor areas, schools which are in affluent areas usually get good facilities, good teachers. If there is any role this institute can play in bringing better science education to these schools, that would be an interesting, you know, topic to discuss.
It would be great. We're not particularly in any special way of doing it. The KITP, you know, is a very small group of scientists who invite and help put together these programs where people come from all over the world. All of our eminent speakers here are not from Santa Barbara. They work elsewhere, and so we're really at that level. These conferences are special. We organize them together, add-ons to our conferences. But for the kind of outreach you're talking, where are you located, for example? Where is your, what? From where? Long Beach City College. Well, you have many great universities within an hour from you, a whole range of them. And as I said, more and more, if you contact them, as Kevin said, you know, you will find people who are both interested, who think it's important, even among the young postdocs. But you have to make the contact. Somebody has to make the contact. Some physics departments around the country are more and more trying to do that. But the communication problem is difficult. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with any of you calling up, as Kevin suggested, the chair of the department, or writing a letter. It will. You wouldn't say the chair of the department.
Yeah, I know.
You'd say the MSO.
The chair may have other reasons to send somebody to you.
at least true in Kevin's department. But yeah.
Hi. Actually, I have a partial answer to the previous question. I've had the fortune to be here several times, and over the years, your website has included slides and audio from the lectures, and I've used Polchinski's and Kip Thorne's ones on black holes, in part. It's hard for kids, if they're just listening to a magic voice coming out of a speaker and a slide, if you were to move one step farther forward and actually do like streaming video, that equivalent, that's one way of allowing kids in schools that are not local to be able to listen to the greats speak.
We do. If you look, I mean, the talks are videoed. You have a video of the, but it, you know, it's not high quality because we don't have the staff, the professional staff, to stand there with television cameras. But everything is video. This discussion will appear in streaming video. You can even put it on your iPod. We now have podcasts, and a lot of people download them and listen to them on their iPod.
You pointed to someone over here.
Well, wherever you're the microphone, so you control things, Jeff.
Okay. I don't know what your group is actually trying to accomplish in reaching out to high schools besides this conference, but the YouTube solution actually works really well. The best analogy may be the Futures Channel, which is used by a little bit of math, a little bit of science, of doing 4-minute cuts of these talks. And then you put a few keywords, and hopefully someone searches. I know you've already discussed that, but from a teacher viewpoint, being a lazy SOB that I am, what I really need that no one provides, and because it's boring to provide, is the little database saying, okay, this video applies to this standard, whether it's California, Illinois, and use this video for Chapter 3, Lesson 5 in Glencoe Physics. Because that's as much work as I'm going to do. If I can't find it that quickly, it's something I'll do special if I'm in a good mood that day.
Yeah.
I hate to say I'm lazy, but without that, those two little links saying this book, use it at this time, on this standard, I ain't going to do anything. And relying on me once a year calling someone to show up, that's sweet. Anyway, don't mean to be mean.
No, I think, sure, we don't have the expertise, the time, the money to do that, but something along, there is, the people who perfect our website have thought of YouTube, and that might come along. You need somebody to cut these snippets and classify them the way you are, but now we're thinking along various lines. Yeah, Kevin.
I think one thing that actually is very helpful is if you find a snippet or something that works well at some point in your class, if there were a mechanism for somehow feeding it back to their website, maybe like a bulletin board where people could say, oh, if you go from minute here to here and you do it at the same time you talk about conservation of energy, you know, this is a really interesting perspective on conservation of energy, right? For example, the little snippet about the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
So let me ask you something has come up, and some people have Marty, great Wikipedia. So we've talked about having a more interactive, I mean, all these high school teachers are here and they talk to each other. Would you like to have a site, a Wikipedia site in which you could exchange information, keep in contact over, add such little bits. I use this thing. We're trying to promote that a bit with this, at a more organized thing, a fancier way with this prize. Is there any reaction to this? You think this is a good idea? Yes. How many of you might participate, submit a presentation? Wow, good.
I'd like to ask you a question. Is it possible ever for any of us to just, like, I live locally in the LA area, to just drive down for one of your professional conferences if we promise not to cause any trouble and keep quiet? And
yeah, sure. In general, we'd like to be notified. Sometimes we usually have room. There's no overloading. There are some issues about getting free meals, but things are in general, everything here is open. This is a public institution. Things are open to the public. But it's nice to notify ahead of time in the standard way. No problem. Come.
The microphone moved. I had a suggestion. One of the conferences you have going now, I actually looked at your website, was on planetary science, planetary physics. And I remember one of the times you asked what could you do to get a more diverse group in, and something like planetary physics will appeal to a broader range of weather physics than particle physics. And being one of the regulars, I understand that I'm coming regardless.
You're voting for planets, okay. That's good to know. I mean, I sort of figured that planets would be exciting. Well, we have a program called Exoplanets. In 2010, runs for the whole spring, from January through May, I think.
I meant weather physics. Climate physics. Sorry, I said.
Well, this year we thought about doing climate or particle physics. Particle, of course, my own point of view. There's nothing more exciting. There's nothing more exciting than particle physics. We knew they would both be exciting. It was more timing and. And the climate is a bit of a more diverse thing. We had a conference with a public forum, which was part of that, which attracted widespread, but it wasn't aimed at high school teachers. But if we do things in the past, that obviously something would be of great interest to a lot of people.
I had another suggestion for those of you who are looking to get in. I'm fortunate that I live close by, and I brought some of my honor students up here. We went into the labs, so they saw how science actually goes instead of in our classrooms. And, oh, this is cool, as opposed to, oh, this is homework. So they saw how they actually work. So if you get the chance to do it. The other thing is that I'm also working up here this summer, is that a lot of the NSF grants have written in them that it's really good if you do high school outreach. So like, although it may be free, these are volunteering. They can also put it on their NSF grant that they did this outreach, and so it looks really good for their grant. So you might throw that in when you're talking to people.
Good point.
Is it possible to do video conferencing? That's one. And second, are there any cartoon animations of any of the last talk?
There are, other than the kind of slides that I was showing you, which in different versions of talks I've given, and maybe other people who work in similar, you know, similar topics have done that are maybe on the web, I don't know of anything where it's truly animated. I have seen on the web some places where they have, for example, what is a hypercube, four-dimensional cube, and what does it look like if you walk around it? And there is an animation of that, and I don't remember the site. I guess I dug it out just the way you might do it, which is hypercube, Google. I know that on my website, my wife, on my request, I should say, programmed a hypercube which you can navigate around. So you get to choose how you maneuver around it, and it gives you a view of what that looks like, just so you can explore and make tangible the idea that more dimensions is not paradoxical. It's not like a square circle. It's just something unusual. And so that is on my website at Johns Hopkins. You can track it down by going to my research page. But I'm sure there's a lot of other things out there, and I'm poorly equipped to answer it in more detail.
Sure. One thing that I think might be an interesting teaching experience for some of your students who want to do extra credit in this is to create some of that kind of material themselves. I know that people younger than me are all much more savvy with PowerPoint and Flash animations and things like that. And it's often a good way for them to get in touch with the actual physics and the concepts behind it to try to convert these things into a visual form. So I learned a lot about gravitational lensing by being told as a young student, oh, try to make an animation of what this looks like. So that's an idea.
Could I just amplify? My wife, who is not a physicist, but it was interesting for her, even in programming this hypercube, which you have to view from different angles with a little bit of trigonometry, the generalization of some of this trig from 3D and 3D projection so that you can view things is actually, even that is interesting. I mean, almost every slide of the stuff I talked about, certainly, you know, it's geometrical, higher dimensional geometry is still geometry, is full of little exercises of this type that you do. So a lot of basic physics and a lot of basic mathematics gets used in all of this, but it does require painstakingly one such topic to be chosen, worked out, made accessible to, you know, whatever audience you're aiming at. It's some amount of work.
All right. First off, the conference is really, really nice, and 2 days would be wonderful, but 1 day is certainly fantastic. Another thing I want to point out is I think it's really worth while remembering that it does get better every year for us high school teachers able to resource things off the web and off your website and things like that. So it is getting easier for me from my perspective. I showed a YouTube version of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, and we were talking about oscillations, and my class was enthralled by that, and they had never seen it, which is, you know, kind of an amazing thing. So we do need to, every year it does get better that way. I think the contest is going to be a really neat thing to do. I think that's exciting. In past years, we've gone through the presenters and the panel people, and they have talked about their educational experiences and why they got interested in physics. Is that worthwhile doing again, do you think?
We could. If there are no other, we could do bio, if there are no other urgent issues. Actually, one thing I wanted to ask you, I mean, we regard you, I think all of us, as serving an incredibly important role, because you know, science depends on young people, and we're always recruiting young people. They are the future of science. And in this country, we're very worried about that, as you all know. Now, in the last year or two, there has been an effort in Washington to greatly increase, one that actually collapsed this December, last December. But before that, it was going well, to greatly increase the funding for the physical sciences in the United States, and which many of us regard as absolutely essential, that we're in grave danger in many ways. And one of the primary goals of that was education, K-12 education in the physical sciences. So what I wanted to get from you was whether you are aware of that, the AC, American Competitiveness Initiative, whether it's had any impact on high school science education, whether you've heard about it, felt it, think it's going in the right direction, any reaction to the ACI. How many of you have heard of the ACI, the American Competitiveness, or the rising beyond the gathering storms? Very few. How this has not been discussed in your high schools or local environments at all, had no impact. How many people sort of never heard of it, no impact? So this is absolutely scary. Really amazing.
It's seen as a policy.
Yeah, well, it is.
But,
well, policy is supposed to impact. That's the point of it.
Theoretically.
Yes?
One of the things that I've encountered.
Microphone. Oh.
One of the problems that I've encountered in our area has to do with, well, there are two, actually. Our school platforms don't support a lot of the video streaming that you have. We were told at the beginning of the year that we were going to have this really wonderful video streaming and all this other stuff, and then, oh, by the way, it won't be ready until April. And that's a little bit late. In addition, we're seeing ramifications from the No Child Left Behind. And by that I mean it's already started at the bottom with biology, having a test in the beginning of June, I believe it is this year, or the end of May, on the curriculum that you're taught. So now the bio teacher is teaching to the test. And once the bio goes through, the next step is chem. And then after chemistry, it's physics. So now you're really limiting us to the topics that we can choose. It's already that way with AP. If you don't teach by the book, the kids don't get fives. But if you want to include something like universal gravitation and go through plotting the orbit of Mercury or Mars, you can't do that and still get through all of the curriculum for the AP.
That's why we're having an election. Go on.
I was just wondering if anybody else feels that middle school teachers might need to be more involved in this. I'm a high school teacher, and I certainly want high school teachers to be invited lots and lots to this. But I have two children that are in middle school, and I have been surprised that they already have set views as to whether they like science and it's interesting or it isn't. And so I think it happens before they get to us, and I think a lot of middle school teachers are more in tune to biology and expose their students to that more and have no clue that this is out here. And so the students have no clue, and they come into my class and they already have set views that I'm going to do this or that.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of, not sure we don't reach, you know, we have a hard and firm policy against somebody, but we, part of the logic behind high schools as such was that high school teachers in general are more educated in physics and could benefit more from, whereas a general science teacher hasn't had that much background might find our conference is a little tough sometimes. That's the idea. We're also somewhat, you know, limited in size, but it's a good point. People get turned off science in our country very early. They're just fiddling. It'll work. You're okay. That's a
I have a comment for the gentleman over there who was concerned about finding lessons and doing things like that. Most publishers of textbooks have forums where teachers can make comments about where they find things and how they do things. And that could be a valuable source for finding your Chapter 3, Lesson 4 type of information.
I have a question. As the as the producers of your products, the products being students, science students, what do you see from anybody's perspective up here on the board is right about high school physics in the United States and what's wrong about it?
Well, I'll let the panel speak for itself and raise any other questions since we're going to end. So let me just say what I think. Nothing is wrong about it. It's just too little. When I go and, you know, we continue to get a flow of extraordinary young people coming into science in the United States. And we see them all the time in our student population. It's great. However, the numbers are small and it appears dwindling. And I go around the world a lot, give a lot of lectures to big groups of young people, young students, high school students sometimes, college students. And I know when I'm not in the United States by the numbers and the enthusiasm that you can just sense. You don't get that anymore in this country. It's very rare. And that's one of the things we're worried about as a society, as a policy issue, because it definitely will hurt us in science and the economy, et cetera, et cetera. And that's my perspective on it.
I just had one comment about your question. I think it's a great question. I have two sons who have gone through school or still in school, and a lot of great things are done in science education. They went to excellent high school, and one thing that they didn't have much of is something that Ayana mentioned, is the ability through the school curriculum to do creative projects completely on their own and develop it, and we're going to talk about it in the next step of something like that was done. But I recall once my son watching him do homework, and he was getting it, doing it very fast, and he wasn't doing what the way I thought was a really rigorous, careful way of doing it. And I said, Brian, you need to do this the correct way. And he says, Dad, I don't have time to do it the correct way. I have to get it done. And he had like 35 homework problems that night. And actually in Ann Arbor, which is where this was, there was another faculty member and I were talking about the same thing, was there was a little too much programmed homework and a little less exploratory homework than we felt comfortable with. But overall, the education was really outstanding. But it was just that one aspect that we commented on.
Okay. I just have a question from an outsider's perspective. Now, in India, the academy takes, Indian academies take a big role. They have an education panel, and they kind of organize workshops where some speakers, like some combination of people like this, go to schools. So this is not an outreach program of any particular lab or a university, but more an academy initiative. So I just wanted to know whether such initiatives exist of the National Academy. This is more a... because that seems to... in India, it's been on for the last 15 years, and it seems to work reasonably... it's growing well. I mean, I can only say that. So I just wanted to share this.
There's nothing... so in the United States, education tends to work down to state level. There's nothing that even... the NSF requires everyone now who gets supported by the NSF to do outreach, but doesn't organize it, doesn't guide it, doesn't offer suggestions, just demands.
No, because as I said, the academy somehow seemed to have worked. As a matter of fact, both of you have given lectures in those programs, right, in India. So,
anyone else on the panel wanted to?
I was just going to make a brief comment about what works and what doesn't, and I don't. It's going to echo some of what you've heard. I mean, So I run an outreach program that's very local at Rochester, and spend a lot of time working with teachers to set up creative experiments for students in their classrooms. And what I find working with the teachers is that they're, you know, fantastic, dedicated people. They, you know, certainly the ones who are coming through our door are willing to put in a lot of extra effort to make things work. And a lot of them have access to some very nice equipment, lab equipment, computers, things like that. But they can't use them because their hands are completely tied by curricular requirements. And the comment regarding the AP, I have of the groups that do research in their classrooms, almost all of them end up starting their research projects the day the AP exam is over, right? And that, you know, you're through, you know, 90% of the course, and senioritis has set in. So there you go.
Can I make a different kind of comment? In Ann Arbor, we have a thing called Saturday morning physics, which I think started at Fermilab a few years ago. But almost 0.5% of the population of the town every Saturday morning for about 9 months comes to hear an hour and a half talk. We do give them donuts and coffee, but the cost of the program is really small. All the lectures are, most of them are postdocs from the physics department. Some are faculty, occasionally visitors. It can be done essentially anywhere where there is a nearby college at any level, and the number of people who come from sort of 8 or 9 years old all the way up to lots of gray hair is amazing. If you think about 0.5% of the population, and it can be done broadly and anywhere and frequently. Thank you.
Ayanna, do you want to?
Oh, no, I really don't have much to add. I'm at least definitely new into going into high schools. This is the second time I've gotten to talk to a group of high school physics teachers. And yeah, I've heard basically the same things. And I think the opportunity for students to interact, especially if they can do something like Saturday morning physics. We have programs at my laboratory, LBL, that do similar things, bringing students out of the classroom environment, a little bit out of the curriculum, where they can just sit and think about whether they like this kind of stuff. Those are the most important. So seeking out and encouraging those opportunities is basically, I think, the best way to break out of this curricular constraint.
Can I speak a little bit theoretically, partly because I've also had limited experience in the high schools. I've done a little bit of that, but not enough to make an authoritative statement. So I'm just going by my own sense of what makes physics attractive or science attractive. And it seems for me that a combination of you do need this sense. I personally hate doing exercises that are 100 years old. And yet, as I hope is illustrated even by my talk, that some of these calculations or the standard pieces of physics, which are 100 years old, are at the core of doing something that can be done today. I mean, breaking some new frontier today. Because it uses the sinews of physics 100 years old. And in a sense, the ideal combination of excitement versus actual rigor and learning something is to have a topic that maybe there's a video of or a live speaker talking about some very current day exploration of science, maybe like this, but where you get a sense of a topic, and then the hard part, there has to be some sort of breakdown of those so that there's something that a student understands is, oh, the make or break is based on this piece of old physics, something that's classroom physics that I can understand. And they can understand it theoretically. And then ideally, there's some piece of it, not all of it, some piece of it which they can even do in a lab, which is, again, some old, venerated lab piece of physics. And when you put it together, in the mind's eye, you have the hands-on feel, without which everything is intangible. You have the theoretical satisfaction of understanding a few pieces of the plot, and then you understand that it's cutting edge, that this is the stuff that's going to make, you know, waves tomorrow, literally. And if you put that together, then I feel that your mind is in the clouds, and but your feet are still on earth. So that's the combination I think I find ideal. And the real problem is how to get that combination going. And in some sense, talks like the ones given here can give some of the cutting edge feel to a lot of the physics. The question is how to provide these other pieces, the exercises, and the labs.
So what a wonderful guide to the prize competition.